Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou. You to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this midweek edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set with the Detroit Tigers, dropping the series 2-1. It is also their third straight series loss. They are currently still second place in the American League East, 1.5 games behind the Tampa Bay Rays. As always, a quick disclaimer for any first-time listeners, this is not a Homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Co-hosting with me tonight from the mile high city of Denver by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, Andrew Dwan. Andrew?
What's going on? Yeah. Well, I know. I think I'm in the best mood of anyone around here.
A whole lot of butt kicking, and we're on the wrong end of it. But we're going to get into that. And hopefully the next show will be happier.
Absolutely.
Well, the next show being the Toronto show. We will have deep dives 24 hours after this one. That might not be a happy show either. But also joining us tonight from the nation's capital by way of Newport, Rhode Island, Job Goddard. Job?
Well, today's a sad day. I was going to save this for deep dives, but Andrew's happy mood kind of put me over the edge here. I resigned my Martin Perez fan club badge today. Officially, I'm out on Martin Perez. We'll get into it during deep dives, but I am not in a good mood. This is going to be one of those is it Job or is it Charlie kind of episodes.
That's funny. So, Job, where can they find you on Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter at JobMLB, J-O-B-M-L-B. Feel free to harass me there. I will respond to any and all comments, messages, resumes, and criticisms.
And Andrew, your Twitter handle.
It's at Andrew DWANMLB. So easy enough.
All one word. So another series loss. I will say Detroit isn't terrible. They have a shot at finishing around 500. AJ Hinch seems to have them in somewhat of a groove right now. Some of their young pitchers are doing well, but this is a series the Red Sox probably should have won. On Tuesday, that was the Garrett Richards start. They dropped that game 4-2. Wednesday night with Erod on the mound, they won their only game of the series 4-1. And then today was a bloodbath between Martin Perez and Hansel Robles, both combining for 6 runs given up. That was 8-1 in favor of the Tigers. So we will get into it, as well as the landscape throughout the division. But speaking of landscape, we'll go with our sponsor before we get into studs and duds. Attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Boston. Do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with the 4th generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. We are live, folks. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're at zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker. It's like having a little astronaut chop your worst weeds up top in your nose and ear. Get 20% off plus free shipping with FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. For a clean Trinity and beyond, your space balls will thank you. They warned me that these would be awkward, and I underestimated that. And I can't keep a straight face like Charlie can and go through it as smoothly, but he will be reading it on Sunday. So let's get into studs and duds for this Detroit Red Sox series. Andrew, you're leading off. Who is your dud for the series? And again, we will start with dud since it was a series loss. So Andrew, who do you have?
Mine was Devers. He wasn't enough. He had 3 hits. He went 3-for-14 on the series. Only struck out twice, but I swear to God, I don't think I've ever seen him leave this many guys on base. It seemed like every single time that they'd set the table for him, nothing was coming through. He wasn't clearing up the ducks on the pond. And if, you know, he's not doing it, we know Xander's in a slump right now. Who's going to do it, you know? So if Devers isn't going to be carrying his weight over at third and just being the masher we need, that sucks, and it's going to give us a lot of problems because that first game was very winnable. If Richards wasn't great, but if, you know, you only let up 4 runs, this team should be able to win those games. And I don't – it just seems like he's popping it up. He's absolutely going for the downs on every swing. We just need line drives to, like, left center, right center, when, you know, there's a guy on second. That's all we need. We don't need a 2-run home run every single time. Just get a guy in. It drove me insane. And I love Devers, but hopefully maybe on the flight out tonight, they're going to have some discussions.
Comerica Park is one of the biggest parks in baseball. We watched two triples get hit there today by the same player for the Tigers. Granted, he's hitting off a tee with Martin Perez and Robles. It's like T-ball. But if you put the ball in the gap, you're going to score runs. And with runners in scoring position, that's what we need to do. Devers looks like he's trying to fix this anemic offense by himself. I had a couple of stats I'd pulled up for the team that I was going to save for my dud, but I'm going to just use them now. In our last 12 games, the Red Sox are obviously 4-8. Not good. They scored 3 runs per game. We averaged 5.6 for the rest of the season. Run differential. You guys want to take a guess what it is, Terry?
Negative 15. Negative 15.
Andrew?
I would say they've been outscored by 20.
Negative 26.
Wow.
Negative 26. Average with runners in scoring position. Care to hazard a guess, gentlemen?
I'd rather not.
They were 0 for 26 with runners at third base coming into today since July 26th. I know that. So
from their last 12 games, they are 160 with runners in scoring position. One out, two outs, no outs, doesn't matter. 160.
That's our the batting average? That's the batting
average.
Okay.
Batting average, 160.
Yep.
Our whiff percentage, 26.7%. We're missing on almost 30% of balls. Whether that's in the zone, outside the zone, that's how much we're swinging and missing at. And our team ERA is a 5.46.
I can add on to that real quick. Post All-Star break, the Red Sox are 15th in batting average. Okay, and I get it. It's not a huge sample size here since the All-Star break. We're talking 18 to 20 games roughly, but still 15th in batting average. Their on-base percentage, they rank 23rd in the majors in on-base percentage. In RBIs, they're 27th, third from the bottom since the All-Star break. Run scored, those stats probably go hand in hand, but 27th as well. In the past 30 days, their starting rotation, which again, we'll mostly be getting into in the next show, rotation 25th in the majors is where they rank. This is a bad baseball team in the last few weeks.
I want to get back to Devers real quick here,
yeah,
Terry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I drag you into this team sucks rant that I have planned. But I feel like Devers is trying to fix the entire offense with one swing of the bat every time he's up this week. Doesn't matter whether he's facing a lefty, a righty, if there's a guy on second, if there's a guy on first, if there's no outs, two outs, one out man on third. This offense, for the first 3 months of the season, was getting guys home from third with less than two outs at like a 58% clip. It was the highest in the big leagues by a good margin. They stopped trying to do that. They stopped trying to move runners across. They stopped playing small ball. And they started playing money ball, home run ball, Yankees baseball. And that's how you lose. And Devers has fallen into that rut. And it's not just Devers. It's the whole middle of the lineup. But I understand, Andrew, why Devers is your stud. I mean, today is just kind of an example of it. Even with a heads-up play he made today to take second base on a bad throw, he just didn't look like he was comfortable in the batter's box today. And this is a guy, you know, pitching against us who has an ERA of a 5-2. A 5-2 with a really, really flat slider. Devers should be hitting that to the opposite field for two bases 2 to 3 times today. And instead, he's popping up. I felt like we were like pop-up central. We hit the ball higher than we did in distance today. It's unbearable. And Devers just doesn't look comfortable in the batter's box. What he needs is batting practice off somebody who sucks. We're not going to get it in the next series, so I'm hoping this long flight home is going to give them some, you know, this long flight to Toronto, I should say, is going to give them a chance to really talk about, you know, getting the bat on the ball, not trying to do too much, just being a better baseball team. Devers is at the heart of it. If he doesn't score runs, the rest of the offense is not going to do it.
Andrew, do you want to elaborate on that? Or expand on it, rather?
No, the only guess I could guess on in pure speculation is that he knows that Xander might be a little more dinged up than we are led to believe with that wrist, and he's overcompensating, but that's just throwing crap at the wall. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and if he is, that's another thing I'm going to rant about in a minute, because it's giving me very much Kemba Walker to the NBA All-Star Game vibes for the Celtics fans who also listen to this show. It's like, if you're hurt, why are you playing in the All-Star
Game? He got hurt the series after in New York.
Well, he was hurt before that, though. And we'll
but the wrist thing came up in New York on the 16th.
True. He got hit on the wrist, and he was popping balls up. I just feel like this lineup is trying to be hero ball, and we just had it so easy and so smooth for the first 4 or 5 months of the season that they're playing like it's the World Series. It's July. They're feeling the heat from New York, and it's going to be one hell of a bumpy finish here.
Well, a couple of things, too. Devers had a bad series, so I'm not disagreeing that he's not a dud, but a couple of things to also consider here. He was moved around in the order, you know, from second to fourth, so he's getting, his role is kind of switching by the day as far as where he is in the lineup. And Xander wasn't terrible. He was 3 for 9. So he was getting on base at various points. And in those 9 at-bats, Xander only struck out once. So maybe he's not going to be hitting dingers, but he's hitting for contact.
This team got on base a lot in this series. But in the first loss of the series, which is the game was pitched by Garrett Loss Richards, right? He went 1 for 10 with runners in scoring position. 1 for 10. That's brutal.
It is brutal.
That's like putting Bobby Dalbec out there with runners in scoring position every time. Can't do that. It's not how you win ball games. And then moving on to game 3, you had a couple of situations with guys on base, and we're popping balls up, and we're pulling balls into the shift, and we're not playing small ball. And that's going to bring me to my dud. I don't want to jump the gun on any more Devers news, but my dud for the series is Alex Cora. And it's for that very reason. This team is in a rut, and it started with the trade deadline, in my opinion, not with the All-Star break as far as Cora being the dud. Cora's been the dud for the last 2 series for me, because the way that he's manipulating the bullpen, the lineup card, and situational hitting, I hate it. Every decision he's making right now, I'm looking at it and going, why are you making that decision? Today, the only decision I like today from Alex Cora, and this is game 3, mind you, for anyone listening, is pulling Martin Perez when he did. You pull Martin Perez after 1 1/3, going with him in the first place is a mistake. We've been talking about it on the show for the last 3 weeks that Martin Perez is done. He hasn't had it since July 5th, or June 5th, I'm sorry. And Cora took the ball from him, gave it to Phillips Valdez, who has been great. But then he takes the ball with a 3-run lead, 3 runs. The offense struggles a little bit, and he gives it to Robles, who pitched the other night, was okay, not great, but had been taxed. Why are you giving it to Robles when you have guys in the bullpen who haven't pitched in 3 or 4 days that are actual quality arms? It's a 3-run game. You're facing Detroit. A Detroit starter who has a 5.2 ERA and a bullpen that's third worst in baseball. And you're giving up on the game. Alex Cora has been good this season at waving the white flag at the right times. Burning Andrés and Valdez instead of burning Ottavino and Barnes is the reason we won a lot of series. But you can't do that in a 3-run game in Detroit in the 5th inning. This team has come back all year. Every series, it's like they have a chance. You don't have a chance if you're down 6-0 in the 6th inning. But if it's 3-0, the way this team's getting on base, they can get out of their offensive rut. But because it's 6-0, they got to swing for the fences. It's a mistake to bring in Robles there. I think there's another mistake, which is not playing Duran today. I understand that he came in defensively in the 7th inning. I would have played Duran from the get-go against a lefty with a flat slider and gas. The one thing that Duran has really struggled with has been the slider and trying to make sure he's ready for it. So what do? Throw him out against a guy who can't throw a good slider to save his life. He threw four sliders tonight that were good, or this today. The rest of his sliders were flat or they were in the dirt. Give Duran a look at a lefty. What are you doing? Bobby Dolbeck is an automatic out. It's frankly pathetic, and I understand some of the blame has to go with Chaim Bloom and the lineup he's working with. But the fact that Marwin Gonzalez and Bobby Dolbeck are in the lineup in a must-win game is frankly pathetic to me. So Alex Cora is my dud for the series.
Yeah, I think he kind of just called it on today's game, and honestly, I don't mind as much as you do, because I think the next seven games in 6 days, he's going to manage like an elongated playoff series, especially with the doubleheader mixed in there too. I think we're going to see Ottavino, Matt Barnes, and Whitlock go more than we've seen all season long. I think they're going to get pushed to their max. So I don't mind saving some bullets. I think he saw what we all saw. That offense wasn't doing anything. Unfortunately, it's just one of those shit situations where you have to put faith in a guy with a guy that you don't really have it with, but you just gotta, you hope for the best. And if you pull it out, hey, that's awesome. But I have no problem not seeing Garrett Whitlock today, because I didn't think the bats were going to do anything.
Andrew and Terry too, do you not have a problem with the lineup card that he trotted out today?
Well, here's one thing, and we're going to get to this player in a little while, but Kike Hernandez was the hottest bat in the last week and a half.
He's been the hottest bat for the last month.
Alex Cora sat him in game one after an off day, and I'm getting sick of this. Our backs are against the wall right now, and there's a lot on the line. There is a lot on the line, and we lost that game 4-2. If Kike Hernandez is in the lineup, I don't know if we turn that into a W, but it gives us our best chance. Do we want to blow it by either not making the postseason or getting bounced early in the postseason because we tried too hard and we ran these guys a little bit harder? Or is it an easier pill to swallow if we didn't try hard enough by resting them all the time? I prefer trying too hard and putting these guys in the lineup. And I'm tired of Cora's aggressive resting against these guys. Is Kike Hernandez tough enough? Would he have been tough enough to play on that 2004 team and make history by winning four straight games in the ALCS? Would Xander Bogaerts be that tough? I question it.
My only thing with the Kike decision, he also got pulled today. Playing center for Duran defensively.
Yeah, and Dahlbeck ended up at shortstop.
I wonder if he's a little banged up. We just don't know about it. So that's one decision I'm not necessarily upset with. But if you look at that lineup, and you look at the game one lineup for this series, Marwin Gonzalez played second. You want to guess what Marwin Gonzalez did in this series, Terry?
Made some errors.
Yeah, you want to guess what he did in offensively, in the batter's box in game one?
In game one, he was 0-for-4 with two strikeouts.
0-for-4 with two strikeouts. Two of those were with guys at second base. Two of those at-bats. He had a guy at second base and struck out. Kike Hernandez probably doesn't strike out in this situation. Now, I understand the lineup would be very different if Kike is going first and not Duran. But if Kike's up with a guy on second and one out, his batting average is like a .246. Marwin Gonzalez hits like .160 after one strike, and he's a .202 hitter on the season. Not to mention that he's ice cold coming off an injury. What the hell's he doing at second base?
Well, they need Christian Arroyo to get back and healthy too. That's definitely a big thing.
I understand that, and I approve of Christian Arroyo at second every day. He's the most sure-handed second baseman we have. But Marwin Gonzalez is at best on this team. He's the 2004 Pokey Reese. He's your defensive replacement at the end of games. He's the guy you plug in when somebody is hurt and cannot go. You don't plug him into the lineup every day. I don't care what the matchup is. He's a 200 hitter at best. We've got three of those.
Also,
and this guy's not hot. He's coming in ice cold.
I want to talk about Dahlbeck, and Andrew, you're talking about this elongated playoff run. First base is going to be a black hole in that playoff run. You're getting Dahlbeck and you're getting Cordero in the platoon, and that's what you're getting, okay?
Why not Schwarber?
When is he going to be back?
By Tuesday.
Probably a week. Yeah, a week at the most.
He'll be back on Tuesday, okay. Supposedly.
He'll go to Worcester for a couple days.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Okay.
Yeah, he's got to go to Worcester.
At most, the earliest projections have him playing Thursday next alongside Chris Sale.
Okay. Tampa. So for a handful more games, we're getting the platoon I was talking about. And that's what we've had for the past couple of weeks. Okay. This isn't unique to the Red Sox. Go back to 2018. Dave Dombrowski DFA'd Hanley Ramirez on May 24th. We rode it out with Moreland for a little bit, and then we went and got Steve Pierce at the end of June. He didn't sit around on his ass, all right? He went and he solved the problem right now. We're hoping Schwarber works out. He's never played at first base. He's got the same exact injury right now that Christian Arroyo had, that he suffered in only his second inning of his first game at first base. So I am taking nothing for granted here, okay? This position should not have been a black hole. I get that the prices were high leading up to the deadline, but we could have been on this in June of this year, but we didn't. That's literally, on most teams, the easiest place to come up with a solution. And it's costing us. Bobby Dahlbeck stranded 5 runners today. He left 5 men on base today. Game 2, he left 3 men on base. We won that game, so I guess it wasn't a big deal. And I don't think...
Terry, this is another thing that I wish I could put on Cora here, because Cora's my dud here, and I'd love to lay this at Cora's feet. This is a Heim Bloom mistake.
That was exactly a Heim Bloom mistake. Here's one other thing, Job. Kevin Plawecki is a 292 hitter right now. That's what he's hitting on in the season. Get him in the lineup. I don't care if he's got to catch and Vasquez has to play first. I don't care. Nothing's ideal. But Cora's getting outmanaged by Kevin Cash right now. He's getting outmanaged by AJ Hinch because he's not being innovative. Okay.
You want to know the embarrassing part? Is not AJ Hinch and Kevin Cash. Those are great managers most of the time. It's the fact that he's being outmanaged by Aaron Boone. In the last three series, been outmanaged by Aaron freaking Boone. This guy should be fired for being a pathetic excuse for a manager in baseball, and he's outmanaging Alex Cora and the 2021 Red Sox over the last 10 games.
He's not being innovative, though, is what I'm getting at. Kevin Cash is the best manager in the division because every year he takes an imperfect team and gets the most out of it. He's used to these situations that we're dealing with right now with the Red Sox. This is an everyday thing for him. Right now, it's a 2021 thing for Alex Cora, and he's not being innovative enough.
Yeah, my main issue with the last 10 to 12 games is something that normally I praise Cora for, and I know Andrew and I are on the same page with this. Cora has an insane amount of patience for guys who are struggling, for young guys, to get them to come through in big spots, to give them the understanding their manager's not going to pull them after a bad game. He's not Williams, right? I mean, the old days of the Red Sox, Jerry Remy talks about it on the broadcast. They'd pull a guy because he went 0-for-4 and he wouldn't play for 3 days. Cora's the opposite. But sometimes you got to shake things up. We praised him for shaking up the lineup card with Verdugo moving down when he was struggling. Shake things up a little bit. Get somebody else in there at first. Get the bottom of the lineup moving a little bit. I understand we're not super healthy, but our 40-man has some good offensive options. Why the hell is Bobby Dahlbeck swinging the bat 5 times with runners in scoring position? Why? There's absolutely no excuse for that. I thought his at-bat in the third inning was pretty good. I think he's been swinging the bat much better than his numbers show. But he's on track to have 250 strikeouts.
Well, they don't have the luxury of doing what they did with Hanley in 2018 because they don't have the financial flexibility due to some of those moves they made during the Dombrowski era. I mean, they have $33 million in retained salary that is either playing on different teams or is just out of the league. So that sucks, not having that money to play with, because they absolutely could have found someone, or they could have bought a contract, but they just don't have that room to maneuver right now.
Let me ask you something. You're the resident Bloom guy on this podcast, and there's nothing wrong with that. Before the season started, not going over the luxury tax. At the trade deadline, there was rhetoric, yeah, we'll go over the luxury tax. So did Bloom not believe in the team last winter, but he suddenly believed in it a week or two ago?
I think he gets permission to go over the luxury tax, and I think at the beginning of the year, the ownership, without knowing when full seating capacity was coming back, I don't think that they were completely in for it. They didn't know what the season was going to look like. I mean, we're all like, all right, we'll get 10% capacity. Now we're going to get 20. Now we're going to get 25, 50, so on and so forth. So I think that played a huge role. And throughout the league, except for the Dodgers, who were so far beyond the, it's like a dot in the rearview mirror. I think that was an enormous thing. And we saw the Padres, the reports came out today that they didn't even want to go over it, and that stopped them from getting Joey Gallo. And the Yankees avoided it like the plague as well. The only team not guilty of avoiding the luxury tax is the Dodgers. And that's because, you know, they have the farm system for it. So if they drop spots in the draft, they don't really care. But I think that the plan changed with ownership. I don't think Bloom gives a damn about going over it, because the way the farm system has gotten rebuilt, they're going to be able to have that benefit of going over, especially this coming season. And, you know, I think they actually might be over it by the time the season ends, based off performance incentives, but that remains to be seen. That's really hard to find in players' contracts. I guess Xander has a good amount of them, but I think it was a wait and see game at the beginning of the year, and I don't think, who knows, we found out that the report of go over because ownership wants to get Scherzer was just Jim Bowden making stuff up again.
Yeah, I'm not putting it on that situation, but there wasn't, like, if you go back two seasons ago, nobody was spending money, and there was the collusion conspiracy theories. Harper and Machado didn't sign until the first week of spring training. That wasn't the case this season. Yeah, maybe teams didn't want to go over the luxury tax, but Toronto still dropped 125 on Springer.
They did really late. That was really late too. They were the only team. I mean,
he had a qualifying. He had a qualifying offer. Well, now, none of those guys signed until late anyway, including Bauer. But
I actually don't blame Chaim Bloom for patience at first base with Bobby Dalbec, or for patience with Franchi Cordero. I blame Chaim Bloom for, in June, when he knew the experiment wasn't working,
and we were at full capacity,
and everyone was healthy, and we knew the 40-man roster crunch was coming, then making a move. Nothing says you have to make a trade at the trade.
But so if you're talking Rizzo, the Cubs were still in it in June.
I'm not even talking Rizzo, and my reasoning is this.
But then who? But what other first baseman moved?
In not 2018,
another, another first baseman that moved, but there could have been.
Yeah,
but none did.
In 2018, nobody had Steve Pearce on their radar, and he wasn't just a beast in the postseason. By the way, he was hit 279 with a 394, nearly an on base percentage of 400 in his regular season time with the Red Sox,
I'm not even asking for a Steve Pearce move. I actually think Kyle Schwarber is a fantastic addition to this team. I think he's going to be great.
I do too.
We talked about it for the last month and a half.
But is he going to be at first base most of the time? If he's not,
I don't think so. The way that health is working out now,
if that fails,
on all cylinders and healthy, then yes, he should be.
If that fails, you got Bobby Dalbec and Franchi Cordero again at first base with Schwarber in the outfield.
Right now, right? I mean, Cora is my dud in this series. I think this team is struggling because Cora is not making the right move. Part of the issue is that he's not being given the right tools. And I understand, for example, that Cora loves Marwin Gonzalez. Why the hell is Marwin Gonzalez up here and Jonathan Araúz is sitting in AAA right now? Jonathan Araúz can hit.
No, Yairo Munoz, actually, it would be the move. He's got, as of a day or two ago, had a 26-game hitting streak. Maybe he's not on the 40, man. But
Munoz as well, but I mean, Araúz was last week and he's hitting 280.
He's not on the 40, but Munoz did just start taking, seeing some action at second.
I look at it and think, okay, Marwin Gonzalez's primary position on this team right now is second base. And he's only getting in there when Kike's not playing. So those at-bats couldn't be better served with Jonathan Araúz. You're telling me Jonathan Araúz right now, who has been
pretty good in his
time with the Red Sox, can't hit 202? Can't put the bat on the ball more than once a game?
I think their stats would be similar, quite frankly.
I would take him over Bobby,
but I think you can buy a luxury ticket in Jonathan Araúz when the team is struggling offensively that you're not going to get from Marwin Gonzalez because Marwin Gonzalez is what he is. You know what Marwin Gonzalez is. Jonathan Araúz came up as a Rule 5 pick. You have no idea what he can do.
That's why I would like to see him just not even have that pressure and just develop. But that's just beside the point. They need to get Christian Arroyo and Kyle Schwarber in this lineup. When they have those two in this lineup, and obviously that's super health dependent on a guy like Arroyo, this lineup is deep. You take Duran out, you put him on the bench. Welcome to eighth inning pinch hitting, and you know, if we need some speed, you have Renfro over and right, you have Kike in center, Verdugo on left. Your infield is pretty stacked, you know, you got Devers, Bogarts, Arroyo, and Schwarber. And then I want to see more of a platoon at catcher with Plawecki and Vasquez, maybe closer to 50-50 at least, if not, you know.
I agree 100% on the catching situation. Another thing, Terry, you mentioned it. We want to see Plawecki in games. He's hitting. The other thing is Christian Vasquez has caught 70 innings more than the next catcher in baseball.
He's caught a lot. You know what they did the other day with him that I loved?
What's that?
Was move him to the 9 hole. Because if there's a guy on third with less than 2 outs, he is going to get that guy in 9 out of 10 times.
He is. He's very good at putting the ball in the air. Situational hitting, but I've mentioned it many times. I don't care what kind of offense you get from the catching position. I don't, as long as you call a good game. Vasquez is going to, by the end of this season, and if we make it to the postseason, have caught 130 innings more than the next guy.
It's a lot. And he's 30. Yeah, it's a lot.
He's not 22.
And what's the reason for it? Season
for some catchers.
What's the reason? Maybe he.
Plawecki was hurt. Plawecki was hurt.
They didn't trust Connor Wong. And so he's caught a lot of innings. And Cora really trusts him there behind the dish. And so would I. I think he's a very good arm behind the plate, which Plawecki is not. We know Plawecki struggles to throw out runners. A lot of the pitching staff seems to trust Christian Vasquez in a way they don't trust Kevin Plawecki yet. But if you cut the innings that Christian Vasquez catches behind the plate by 20%, I bet you boost his batting average by 10% and his slugging percentage probably goes up 25%. Because that's the Christian Vasquez that we had in 2020. It's the Christian Vasquez we had in 2019. He's just catching far too many innings. And I think that's also, you know, it's injuries. But right now, in the situation we're in with an offensive rut, let the Tigers try to steal second. I don't care. They're the Detroit Tigers. Is Miguel Cabrera going to steal second on you? No. They have two guys with speed. Oh, well, if they steal second, they steal second. Put your best offensive options in the game and let it roll. Very frustrating for me by Alex Cora in this series. I don't want to talk about all of his mistakes because I think some of his mistakes are pitching related, and we're going to get really into it in deep dives.
That we will. All right. I got enough off my chest for this episode. This is probably the most frustrating I've been all season. You know, if we're getting shelled in the month of May and we're just a bad team, I'm just going with the flow. But when we got a shot here to win a division, not have to play a one game wild card, it's stressful. It's really stressful.
I mean, listen, Terry, if we go 5-2 or 4-3 over these next seven games between Toronto and Tampa, depending on who we take those games from, we could be in third place in the division. We could be in fourth place in the division, God forbid. Or we could be two games clear of first place. It all depends on the matchups and how we do. And don't look now, but the New York Yankees are five games out.
Did they?
They're going to get lost in the cornfields of Iowa in like a week, so it's all good.
We only have a small margin of error here, and it's shrinking really fast. This is it. The whole division is going to be won in this week. And my frustration with the team has never been higher.
It's huge because we got two series against the Indians. We got the Twins, who are weaker now because they sold off some pieces. So we just need to beat these good teams. That way we can just kind of roll through those bad teams with a better rotation because we're going to have Sale back and hopefully Arroyo and Schwarber in the lineup. But
hope is coming because Alex Cora's post-game speech today was the best thing I've heard from anyone in the Red Sox organization since April of this year. And we're going to talk about it when we do deep dives.
We are. All right, let's get into the studs side of it. Andrew, go ahead.
And we kind of touched on him. Mine was Kike. To this point, it was as he goes, the offense goes, because he was setting the table, but my dud didn't really pick him up at all. He was his normal good self. He did what he needed him to do. I love him. I think Kike's been just phenomenal, and he's doing everything you ask for. He's getting on base. What do you have? He had that bomb yesterday to deep left field, followed up by Duran. It was like, oh my God, maybe this is like that Toronto game all over again. And he's taking walks. He took three walks in the two games he was in. Hopefully he's okay, as Joe pointed out, physically. I am sure he's playing at a clip he really is not used to playing at. So that could be another reason why he has been getting some extra wind on the bench there. But yeah, no complaints with Kike. And I think he's probably one of the only guys that we can say that about.
Yeah, it's nice to see him drawing walks for sure, because he wasn't doing that a ton the first couple of months. Joe, go ahead.
He has absolute command of the strike zone right now. He's not swinging at bad pitches. The fastball up, which was giving him trouble early in the season, he's catching up to, and he's driving the ball. I absolutely love watching Kike hit right now. I just feel like he's one of the only guys who's not carrying his frustration from one at-bat to the next. And so it's refreshing because the rest of this offense is not doing their job. So I'm very happy with Kike in the leadoff spot right now. I feel like we've been on the seesaw all season. Do we need a leadoff hitter? And every time we think we need a leadoff hitter, here comes Kike. And if he is hurt, then I think we're in real trouble.
I don't have a ton to add. I've been pleasantly surprised with him, especially being a viable leadoff guy, because I didn't think he would be. And He's making the best of it, and he's under contract through next season, so it'll be interesting to see if he keeps that spot, but I'm sure he's going to be productive wherever in the lineup he is. Let's talk about Jarren Duran. 3 for 11, had a home run in game two. 4 strikeouts, which has kind of been a problem for him, but 3 for 11, and Detroit's probably a decent team to try to figure stuff out against. So what's his future? Is he bound for Worcester once we get a couple of these guys back?
Well, probably if they don't think he's going to play every day, but this is what he's supposed to be, a 240 hitter. Yeah, I don't know if people expect him to be like 275, 280. That's just not who he is. He has a lot of swing and miss. That's just, you know, that's the book on him. If he can hit 240, he's going to give you a good impact on there. And he's obviously not doing that right now, but it's super early. We've seen so many of these call-ups just struggle mightily. I'm trying to pull up Wander Franco's numbers. I don't know if he's pulled it together, but Kalenic, his first call-up, he went over 48, and he's the number – he was at the time the number 3 prospect in all of baseball. Yeah, Franco's hitting 244 with OPS of 696.
That's higher, though, in the last couple of weeks, so he's probably been okay in that span, but –
but if, like, those guys are going to be struggling, the premier 1 in 3 prospects in all of baseball, it's very fair to believe that, you know, Duran's going to take some time to get acclimated.
I mean, it's expected that he's going to take time to get acclimated. You look at think about some of the rookies that in past Red Sox seasons have come in and made a huge impact. Offensively, Dustin Pedroia hit 184 through May, playing every day, second base. He won Rookie of the Year. The next season, he won MVP. Go a little further on, 2007 was Dustin Pedroia. Go a little bit further on, the next guy to really make an impact, Mookie Betts, as a rookie. Mookie Betts, when he first came up that July, the first 10 days, absolute tear, hit 304. You guys know what he did for the next month? He hit 145 for the next month before turning it back on a little later in the season. Granted, we didn't go, you know, win a World Series, but those are the numbers you're going to get from rookies. You can't judge a guy on 50 at-bats in any league. David Ortiz in 2009 was done. He went like 30 for 176 in his first 176 at-bats through May. And then he hit 370 for the rest of the season and ended up with 32 home runs and 107 RBIs. Doesn't matter if you're a rookie or if you're a veteran. You're going to go through patches like this, but especially when you're a rookie, these patches are expected. Anything they give you is a bonus. His 41% strikeout rate at this point is concerning, no doubt. But it's not because he has a bad approach at the plate. He's not swinging at balls outside of the strike zone and fishing like Bobby Dalbec. If anything, he's being too patient. He's waiting for the slider so much that he's missing straight fastballs. I don't have an issue with Jarren Duran and his play so far. In fact, I think they need to put him in the lineup every day. Because right now you've got 3 lottery tickets in the lineup. You got Franchy Cordero, Bobby Dalbec, and then right now Marwin Gonzalez. Those 3 guys are like automatic outs. So if you're going to have patience with Bobby Dalbec, you sure as hell better have patience with Jarren Duran. I hope he's not Worcester bound. I hope they find a spot for him on this roster, even if it is in a speed demon, 8th inning, guy on second base kind of role, a la Dave Roberts, because there's no one else on that team who can fit that role. And he can't help you from Worcester.
Well, when Arroyo comes back, Kike's going to center.
Yes.
So,
yes, I would imagine so.
So Duran has to go to Worcester at that point.
Well, at that point, you can put him on the bench and play him against right-handed pitching, where Arroyo has bad splits against lefties, against righties.
Unless they
play him in a platoon.
unless they keep him up and try to keep Arroyo to like 4 days a week for, you know, for his own 3 weeks of it.
You could take Verdugo out, I guess, a couple days a week too, but
I mean, I look at it and go, Arroyo has been hurt 4 different times this
season? Yeah, and he might be up for 5 minutes again. It's ridiculous. He's played 70 games, I think, something like that.
And it just feels like in order to avoid another IL stint for him, you need to not play him every day.
Well, he's gotten some weird ones. He got the collision in the outfield and then hitting the hand twice in the same spot.
Sure. I mean, they're not conditioning injuries.
Yeah, which is good to see, yeah.
And he talked about how that's what's been keeping him positive. He's like, these are injuries that no one could avoid, nothing I could have done differently.
Yeah, not pulling a calf or something.
So, I feel like he would be more effective in the Steve Pierce role at this point, based on his health and the fact that we're going to need him down the stretch here and hopefully into October. So, I don't want him playing every day if it means that he can't be ready when we need him in October. I'd rather him be ready to crush left-handed pitching, where Duran struggles anyway, and then, oh, guess what? There's a guy on second with two down. Let's put Michael Chavis, secret weapon, out there. It's like every time you need a big hit, he comes through. I want him to be ready. So I hope Duran is the guy to play opposite. You find a way to fit him in the lineup, and maybe you lose a guy like Franchi Cordero. Raquel Schwarber, and you lose another guy on the roster. I don't know where it would be. Maybe a Yaxel Rios, so you go one less pitcher for his bat. I think Duran is a game changer. I really do.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's not going to be an easy fit one way or the other. Alex Verdugo, 4-for-11, had a better series offensively, though he did leave 5 runners on base in that frustrating first game, but still 4 hits, not too bad. Eduardo Rodriguez finally seemed to right the ship, 5 innings pitched, wasn't super efficient, walked 4 guys, but struck out 10.
His changeup was better than it's been all year.
Yeah.
6 mile an hour slower, which was the key.
He went from 87 to 81 miles an hour on the changeup. Now, he throws 93 miles an hour as his fastball. He's not throwing 97. So that difference is the difference between bloop hits and soft
contact.
Which it's
all been.
And swing and misses. And if you look at it, like some of the advanced stats, I don't want to go too deep into it, but like his fielding independent pitching, like how well he's doing depending on defense and things like that, he's been in the top couple percentile. I mean, he's been the most unlucky pitcher in baseball, maybe the second most unlucky pitcher in baseball by the numbers. And it was nice to see him kind of take the defense out of the equation. Like, I'm going to do this. He did get into a little trouble there when they pulled him. I thought he could have gone another inning if he didn't walk 4 guys. But he was good.
Yeah, he attacked the top of the zone pretty well throughout the game as well. So we might touch on him a little bit and with the rest of the rotation and deep dive. So we'll get into that a little more in depth. Salamora, a couple of scoreless appearances out of the bullpen. Barnes looked good closing out game 2. So that's about the more notable honorable mention. So let's switch over to the Toronto series. Nathan Eovaldi versus Alec Manoa.
Terry, I don't want to interrupt you, but we forgot to talk about my stud for the series.
Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
Mr. Phillips Valdez.
Of course. My bad.
You know, I don't want to interrupt.
You should interrupt me.
He was by far and away the best Red Sox player in this series, and he has been since coming back up, the most consistent guy. Lineup, bullpen, doesn't matter in what facet. He's the most consistent guy on the Red Sox so far. He's gone 4 outings, 3 of which were scoreless. 1 outing where he gave up 3 runs. 9.2 innings pitched, 3 runs allowed. He was dominant against the Yankees in a much-needed relief appearance where he came in and pitched 4 innings, 7 strikeouts. It was the best his fastball has ever looked The time down at Worcester seems to have sharpened his fastball, so he's not just a changeup-only pitcher. And then today, coming in with the bases loaded and one out in the second inning, he managed a super weak ground ball where, granted, the runner scored, but only because it was the first pitch he came in, he had to get off the mound in a hurry, and he had the heads-up knowledge to know he's not getting that guy at home and spin on a dime and throw a bullet to first base to get the runner at first. And then to strike out Miguel Cabrera with a nasty, nasty changeup down in the zone after challenging him with some fastballs. Miguel Cabrera can still hit, so that was still big. And I think without Phillips Valdez's performances in New York and then today, you're looking at much more ugly losses. In fact, you're looking at position player pitching kind of losses in both those games. If Yaxel, Rios, and Robles don't come into those two games, especially Robles today, we got a chance to win that game, and it's because Phillips Valdez is a weapon. All of a sudden, he's pitching himself into the conversation as far as who can you trust? So I think he was just phenomenal today. He's been phenomenal since coming back up, and he's going to be your Tim Wakefield down the stretch here. He's your rubber arm. How often can you throw Phillips Valdez? I mean, he said it yesterday in an interview. Put me out there for as long as you need, whenever you need. I'm ready to go, and I'll give you my best. And he's not like he's throwing 99, so he can do it.
Andrew, thoughts on Valdez?
Yeah, I thought Julian Tavares was great. You know, so that's my comp right there. He's our modern Julian Tavares. If we need him to start a game, he'll start a game. If we need him to throw five in relief, he'll throw five in relief. Yeah. I mean, he's doing exactly what you asked him to do. I agree. I think that stint down in Worcester really did well to him because he's not just relying on one pitch anymore, which gets predictable after a point unless you're Mariano Rivera. You know, he's not going to be your eighth inning guy, but he can be your absolutely trusted sixth inning guy and not just hold your breath and hope. So as you know, the season goes on, we're going to need him in bigger spots. The more we push Barnes and Ottavino, who've looked better again, and Whitlock, nothing but respect for the job and the role that Phillips Valdez holds.
In two out of those four, as Job was pointing out, the first one was the Gerrit Cole game where he had to come in the second inning. And then today in the second inning with the bases loaded, and he only gave up one of those inherited runners. It seems like Valdez really thrives off of the stressful situations, it seems like, because those have been his best performances. And then that 1-3-run outing where he gave up those three earned, it was just a random appearance.
Yeah,
they pulled him out of the pen. And
he just didn't have it that day. I mean, we've seen it, bad performances from everybody in this pen but Josh Taylor at some point during the season. And it was almost like they were sitting on the changeup, and rather than pitch to the hitter's weaknesses, he just decided to keep going back to the changeup. And like Andrew said, unless you're Mariano Rivera, you can't let them know what you're going to throw every single time without getting hit. So he was more unpredictable today. Big step forward again. Very happy with his progress.
Getting into, again, the Toronto series, now that we covered all the bases, Nathan Eovaldi, Alek Manoah in game one. This is the biggest game of the series to me. Right away, if Eovaldi loses, it's a tough sell to me that you're getting two wins out of Pivetta, Hauk, and Richards.
Hauk and Richards? We're gonna have to talk about that in deep dives, I think, for certain.
Well, Pivetta and Hauk both have the seven inning games, and then Richards closes it out. That's an automatic loss to me.
It's definitely that. Cora said there was no change through Sunday.
Oh, that's what you meant. I gotcha. Yeah, okay. Yeah, because Cora did make a comment where, like, day by day at the end. But, yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's just go back to game one, though. How do you guys feel about it?
Manoah's awesome. He's a high lever charm. Has he pitched since coming back from injury? Maybe he's had one time out. I don't know. That's a tough one. I can't get a good read on this series because, weirdly enough, I see them losing the game that they should win and then winning the games they should lose. I just think it's a little weird right now, and that's just my gut feeling at this point.
I think they lose game one. I don't think it's close. I'd like to say that Nate Eovaldi is going to do what he seems to have done every time we need him to, which is be the stopper. But I don't know that our offense has enough to get the job done in Toronto, where emotions are running high for that team. Their first division game back in their own building with fans in the stands for the first time in 2 years. This is why Toronto scares me. I think they're going to be ready to hunt Nathan Eovaldi. And I don't know that our offense can keep up in a slugfest right now. So I think we lose game one.
Manoah has pitched one game since returning. That was on July 29th against the Kansas City Royals.
That's the Royals.
He went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs.
Yeah.
Only struck out 4. But, yeah. We're playing like the Kansas City Royals right now, though, if we're being completely honest. So it's a tough matchup. I was just pulling up Eovaldi's, trying to get his Toronto numbers here. Actually, Eovaldi pitched very well in his last outing against Toronto. That was actually in June. 6 2/3, scoreless as well. And that was his
only
start.
In Buffalo, correct?
Yes, that would have been Buffalo at that point. So I guess it is good that they've only had one look at Eovaldi now. They've had 6 looks at Pivetta, I think, literally. So it's the best matchup. Two of their better pitchers. I'm going to lean towards Toronto just because I think they've got the momentum. We don't. I hope I'm wrong. I'm wrong a lot, so hopefully I will be in that one. So Saturday we have the 7-inning doubleheader. The first one starts at 3:05 Eastern. That's going to be Nick Pivetta versus Robbie Ray, who's been pretty tough this year. I think we did get to him in one of the starts, but
we did. We tattooed him for 6 runs in 4 innings.
Yeah. But he's having his best year since probably 2017 with the Diamondbacks. And Pivetta's been up and down, looked pretty good in his last start against Tampa, but that's been a team he has dominated against. So if Pivetta's going to get back on track, this would be a lineup I'd like to see it against. My confidence goes up if he has a good outing here against Toronto. How do you guys have that first 7-inning game?
I like this day. I like the whole day for them. I think they're going to have their backs against the wall. I think the claws are going to come out. And Robbie Ray is annoyingly efficient and good this year, but we have it on record. They can hit him, and they've let him off the hook when they haven't hit him in just situations where you thought they'd score some runs, but then didn't pull it through. I don't know. I like it. I think they win.
This team is 19-20 for a 4.88 winning percentage in day games this season. I think that continues. So I think they have Nick Pivetta's number. And I do think our offense is going to play better in the doubleheader. But I think we lose this game. I think we probably lose this game pretty handily. And it's going to feel like panic mode with whatever lineup comes out for game two of this series. Or game two of the day, rather.
I also have the Red Sox losing game one. I feel much better about the Eovaldi start than I do this Nick Pivetta start. But we'll see. Game three, another really good pitching matchup. Tanner Houck versus newly acquired Jose Berríos. And the Red Sox have hit Berríos pretty well. And I think we, ironically, we played him in a seven-inning doubleheader earlier in the year against Minnesota. And Berríos was pitching a good game, but we finally did get to him before he was taken out. And I think he gave up something like four runs in that start. So if we can do that again, I like Houck a lot more than Pivetta in the earlier game. So I think this is a very winnable game for the Red Sox.
I had them win both these games. So I don't know. Berríos, he's got to show me more than what he's shown. I know he's capable, but I think he's put some stats up against some inferior competition that may have led to a not undeserving reputation, but might have inflated his reputation a little bit. But I think he is good. I just don't think he's as good.
Well, I think Berríos is a three who's the one in a lot of people's minds based on the price tag that was attached to him.
And that was a big one.
At this deadline. I don't think he's going to live up to expectations on this day. I think we handily win game two of this set. And my reasoning is twofold. One, the bats can only struggle for so long. I have us losing in game one of this because we don't play well during the day. Clearly not morning people. But Tanner Houck's slider against that righty heavy lineup in Toronto has me thinking that he's going to go seven innings. Like, he could go all seven. I think he probably strikes out eight guys and gives up one run through five, if I'm realistic. But I think we win that game probably 5-1, maybe 4-1. But I think we win that game and set the tone for a big homestand with Tampa coming in.
I like that game as well, and I love the fearlessness of Houck and, quite frankly, everything about him. He still definitely does need to get that third pitch going, whether it's his splitter or if he's going to throw more sinkers, but he's been pitching well. He's got an upper twos ERA on the season, so I like that game. And then finally, game four, Sunday, Garrett Richards against Hyunjin Ryu, who has dominated us in two out of three. We did get to him pretty good in the first meeting, but he has definitely pitched very effectively against us in at least two meetings since then. And if Alex Cora is smart, he's just gonna try to get the most that he can the first time through the order with Richards and then have a game plan shortly thereafter.
All right, so for me, they lose this game 4-1. Richards looks really good through five innings. Let's, you know, a couple walks up in the final frame. They don't use any of their 18 pitchers because they rely on them so heavily the first three games in 2 days. And then, you know, the wheels come off with two inheritor runners scoring and we lose that last one. That's, I feel like that's the Richards like playbook lately where it's like, oh my God, he actually doesn't look that bad. And then like one thing happens, another, then like an inheritor runner or three comes across.
I hate to ever beat the Garrett Richards drum, so I'm not going to do it. I'm going to say two things. One, I don't think Garrett Richards starts on Sunday. This is a bold take. I know Cora has said that Garrett Richards is going to be the starter. Pretty much all season he's had his back. Cora is today's post-game press conference. Did you guys watch it?
Nope.
Well, he was asked if there was going to be changes to the starting rotation this week, and he said, tomorrow we're going with Nate, and we'll see what happens from there. And that got me, my blood pressure went through the roof with excitement. Not even anger, just excitement. Because to me, That means we might not have to watch Richards on Sunday. We might get to see Garrett Whitlock. We might get to see name that player. We might even get to see Connor Siebel.
That's what I was wondering.
That's 5 days.
Yeah, when you said that, that's what I was wondering.
There are plenty of options for a move to be made here. And I think even if Richards is healthy, he might be a scratch here. You might go with Whitlock, Valdez, Ottavino, Barnes. Because this is the first time that I've ever been excited by the seven-inning doubleheaders. I think Houck can give us 5 innings. I think Pivetta, whether he's good or bad, he'll get us through 5 innings. Either way. So I think we're going to have a rested bullpen. I'm going the opposite of Andrew. I think we're going to have a rested bullpen for the fourth game of this series. And I think we're going to use all the bullets in the chamber. Because if you come out of here with a series split, I'm okay with that. Getting ready for 3 against Tampa. And your ace, the heart and soul of the team, the competitor, the guy who literally cut up jerseys because he has such a competitive spirit, didn't like the uniform and the feel of the uniform, is coming back, and he's going to pitch in that next series. We just got to get there. Even if he's not the 2019 Chris Sale, he's going to be Chris Sale. So I'm hoping that we don't see Garrett Richards. If we do see Garrett Richards, I think it's going to be exactly what you said, Terry. It's going to be, can you give us 3 innings? And then we'll go to Whitlock for 3 innings, and then we'll piece it together from there. Because I don't think Garrett Whitlock sees a lot of action in case he's needed for Game 4 of this series.
Well, I have Toronto taking it 3-1. I would love a split in this one. I would consider that to be a big victory. I mean, we've only won 3 of our last 10, so to win 2 in 3 days would be big, but Andrew, sounds like you're the opposite. Win 3 out of 4.
I had a splitting. I had bookend losses, wins in the middle.
Gotcha. And Job, as he chugs his massive Powerade.
Yeah, I'm trying to get through the evening tonight with this 2-liter blue Gatorade here. But yeah, I have us losing the first 2 and then winning the second 2. I have a feeling there might be a team meeting in there somewhere. There might be a players-only closed-door meeting, which seems to happen every season that we end up winning something good. There's one point in the season where the de facto captain gets the guys in a room and says, look, stop playing like crap.
Probably happened tonight. I mean,
that's possible that we haven't heard about it and that it happened tonight. But I would
on the plane, I'm saying.
It might be happening right now. This plane ride to Toronto is probably very uncomfortable. And I hope that at some point during this series, the guy that does it is J.D. Martinez, is Xander Bogaerts, is, hell, Nate Eovaldi, Matt Barnes.
It would have been tonight, because usually the next day you want your best starter to go out. So we can rule it out happening on Saturday night.
If it's happening now, like, that's even better. I haven't heard anything about it, haven't seen anything about it. We might wake up to it tomorrow. But I think that there's going to be a big turning point in the attitude of this team, and it's going to come with Tanner Houck taking the mound for Game 2.
Well, we'll see. It's a team that keeps things close to the vest, so we'll see if anything comes out after tomorrow's game. If suddenly the offense explodes, maybe we will hear about a team meeting. If they get their butt kicked, we're not hearing anything. So we'll wrap on that. Again, deep dives 24 hours after this one. Let's see, that would actually be Saturday morning, and then we'll be back Sunday night to discuss what did happen in this Toronto series. Take care.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.